Howdy, neighbors, and welcome to this edition of our Ag Perspectives podcast from the Radio Oklahoma Network and OklahomaFarmReport.com. We continue our coverage from the Summer Cattle Industry Business Sessions here in Denver, Colorado. And today we have the opportunity to sit down and talk one-on-one exclusively with Tom Hayes, CEO and President of Tyson Foods.
Tell me a little bit about how you have arrived at your position. You're involved with Tyson, first of all, but then your position as CEO.
Sure. Yeah, so I started with Tyson with the acquisition of Hillshire. So Hillshire Brands was a company that was acquired by Tyson in 2014, August. And I was the chief supply chain officer at Hillshire Brands. And so as we were merging the two companies together, there was every executive was talked to about what sort of role they thought they would want to play in the future. And I didn't assume that I was going to wind up as a CEO, I'll tell you that. But I did talk about, you know, just continuing to help the company be successful. And certainly I have a great appetite for seeing the change that we've made and want to be a part of it. And happy to be, you know, where I am today. But it's been about, 4 years, or I guess coming up on 4 years here, where the company was acquired. But then also, now a year and a half as CEO, and it has been a great experience.
You have come into a company that's got a tremendous heritage. We were talking about the fact that most folks growing up would think of Tyson and chicken, but you've added the other major proteins, pork and beef, and a very dynamic combination.
We're very proud of being a chicken company, but also beef, pork, and prepared foods. Tyson absolutely has a great heritage in the, with the brand. And there's a lot of things that just remain in common about what Tyson started as and what it is today, which is that entrepreneurial spirit, innovation, focus on doing things that are right along the supply chain. And so what's helped us is really understanding what it takes to get great food to the plate, but then also how do you innovate to excite consumers to actually create brand new products, given all the resources that a company like Tyson has.
I know that when Tyson was acquiring and getting into the pork business and definitely into the beef business, there were some questions within folks within the beef industry about, you know, was this going to be good or bad to be acquired, in fact, by a poultry company, a poultry-based company. You've come in kind of as that prepared food person. How do you see the dynamics between the various species and the various divisions of Tyson? How do you successfully get them all moving in the same direction?
You know, one of the things we did early on was we tried to say, let's put these businesses together and try to create a network or a matrix organization so we'd have one face to the customer and we could maybe even ship everything all in the same truck. And that didn't work. And the reason why it didn't work is even though they're very similar businesses, there's a lot that is different in terms of executing the operating model to actually have each one of the individual divisions stay successful. So the way that we're set up today is we do have a fresh meats standalone business in Dakota Dunes, which is the former IBP business. And they market and increasingly on a premium basis, you know, pork and beef. And then the poultry operations, the Tyson Foods legacy operations, are in Springdale, Arkansas, and they continue to be very successful. And Prepared Foods is headquartered in Chicago, where the company was when it was acquired with Hillshire Brands. And now what we've tried to do is understand exactly where we could leverage the benefit that Tyson would have by bringing our power to the equation across those for the benefit of customers and consumers, but not go so far as to, you know, put resources together where they're not creating an advantage or somehow giving us, you know, value that we can create for our shareholders.
You alluded a little bit to the consumer in your presentation this afternoon. What are you seeing about the consumer? How do you read today's consumer in relation to your meat businesses?
The consumer today really wants solutions that are flexible, so they're not necessarily sitting down for three meals a day, and they're choosing to have, you know, many occasions, whether it's snacking or, it could be during breakfast time is actually, or breakfast is served at dinner. So there's a lot of flexibility they're looking for. One thing that is absolutely clear is they want more protein. There are about 60% or so people in the U.S. today that are actively seeking to get more protein in their diets, less carbohydrates, more proteins. And they also want to have fresh products, clean label, you know, fewer ingredients, fewer preservatives. So those are the trends. But at the same time, they're not willing to give up sort of exploration, like spices and different styles. And it could be from different regions of the world where they have, you know, ideas about how they want to create new flavors and so forth. So they're very experimental, and it's all about the experience. So it's almost like they want it all, right? And that's what we do, is attempt to provide them, you know, the innovative solutions that meet those needs.
I can remember when the beef industry looked very enviously over at the poultry industry and the ability to crank out new product ideas and have new products continuously coming to the retail meat case. Do you see that more and more in the future of the beef end of your business?
Yeah, I think in the beef business, what is a big shift today is how the product actually reaches the shelf. And there's an opportunity to do, you know, some innovation there in terms of the product itself, but it's really the whole business model. So our case-ready business, you might be familiar with that, takes the butchery out of the back of the grocery store. But the product that is presented on shelf looks like as if, you know, the on-site it was butchered there. And so we believe that is a business that's going to continue to grow as more and more stores look to bring, you know, that sort of process out for safety reasons and otherwise. But even that, on the products themselves, we're seeing, you know, our premium programs with its open natural antibiotic free products, as well as some of the other different types of specialty cuts, Angus. So there is interest in the provenance of, you know, where these products are raised, but then also just the, you know, way it's prepared and the spices that are used. So there is definitely openness to more innovation in beef, and we're doing a lot of it with Tyson Tastemakers and some of our other, you know, branded products.
Have you discovered through your research that consumers are willing to pay up for a higher quality product?
They definitely do. If it meets their quality expectations and it's something that they, you know, believe is of value, but it meets high quality expectations, they are willing to pay a premium. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we've seen that, you know, with Angus and some of the other, you know, premium cuts, right? That is something they absolutely will. There's always, you know, sort of a limit to that, but we're always testing those limits.
Very early in your presentation, you talked very quickly about sustainability and your willingness and your interest in supporting the U.S. Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. Why is that?
Consumers want it, and it's also the right thing to do. You know, there's so much that we can do as an industry to make sure that we have less of a footprint. We have a responsibility. If we're going to have, you know, 9 billion people on the planet Earth by 2050, we have to play our role to make sure that we're doing more with less. So we are very excited about the U.S. Roundtable for Sustainable Beef, as well as some other things that we're doing individually as Tyson, but also in cooperation with our producers, to think of new ways that we can continue to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, reduce water usage, land stewardship, things that will continuously improve the system that we have today because the consumer wants it. It's the right thing to do. And by the way, a lot of the projects that we execute actually have great returns, because if you're reducing water usage and you're paying less, you're hitting sort of on all the ends, right?
Tom, I know that Tyson, you alluded to the group here today at the Summer Cattle Industry business meeting, that you've got to be engaged with trade if you're going to be successful in your line of businesses. Where do you see all this coming out at the end of the day?
I hope at the end of the day things get settled, because what's hurting us right now is the uncertainty. So uncertainty is not our friend. So we need to have relationships that require, you know, good discussion and good for both parties in terms of the trade, but we need open access. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say that's, you know, free trade everywhere, but it's definitely fair trade, and to make sure that we're happy with the relationships that we have. We are a nation that produces the best quality at a good cost food, and we need to have the access to the markets and be on a level playing field in order to maximize the potential. So we are actively engaged with anybody that we can talk to that will have influence and certainly express our position that is what we need to be playing for, because it's so important to our industry. And it's not just about, I would say, the cattle industry, but all over the food, you know, the food industry, for us to be open access to the markets that we need to achieve.
how difficult it is for Tyson to be a player when markets are so differently structured. In other words, they've got different rules for China, different rules for Japan, different rules for the European Union.
You know, it just makes it more difficult if you have, you know, individual bilateral agreements that need to be struck instead of having, you know, master agreements with, like, you know, NAFTA and, you know, certainly TPP. We believe that in any case, you know, what needs to be done is the trade needs to be open. So if we have individual relationships, that's fine. But certainly the more that we can get done with one agreement, the better. But again, it's just about getting that access and having, you know, a reasonable time period to get it done so we don't live with the uncertainty.
So when it comes to the beef producers that you're working with, the folks, you know, all the way down the chain from seed stock to the cow-calf man to the stocker operator to the feedlot and then actually to your plants, what do you want from the beef chain? What do you want from those producers that are make up that supply line to your packing plants?
I would say a focus on quality and service. You know, what our customers expect is that we have the right product there at the right time, you know, excellent quality, because that's what their consumer wants. So if you start with the consumer demand and what are their expectations, that feeds all the way back up through the supply chain. And we need to have that same approach at our plants, and we expect it of our producers for sure. But I would say it's not an obligation that we put on them and just say that we have to have these, you know, service level agreements or anything like that. I would say we also work with them very closely to make sure that if there is waste and there are ways that we can show up better as a customer, if you will, that we see those and make the right changes in our system.
One other thing that kind of gets outside of that that direct pipeline of today is you were asked on stage about clean meat, or as some folks in the industry are calling it, fake meat. Where do you see the industry going? Is this going to be something that Tyson and others are going to embrace and have as a part of your repertoire?
So we have a minority investment in Memphis Meats and also a company called Future Meats, and their objective is to raise, you know, or grow meat through cells. And I do think there is some potential there, but the important thing is we invested so we could stay abreast of those opportunities that could be things that would be disruptive forces in our industry. We are committed to protein, and so we are looking for all types of and forms of protein that are going to resonate with consumers. And so it's our responsibility for, you know, our team members as well as our share owners to make sure we have a foot in those camps so we can be a driving force and be a conversation leader versus just a participant. And so it's yet to be seen how successful those products are going to be. Very expensive right now. Seems like they're making great improvement, but time will tell.
So is, from what you're hearing, we're hearing 2-3 years before it might be commercially available?
I don't, you know, I wouldn't even put a time frame on it like that. I haven't seen evidence that that's the case. I know that there is great improvement, but to even put a timeline on it that is that near in, I haven't seen that yet.
You indicated the USDA was probably the right place to have the regulations over this lab-grown meat.
I think what the USDA provides the industry is certainly an excellent organization and one set of standards, one set of rules. And so what I said today was, and I'll tell you now, is that our belief is that that's the right way to run, certainly as it relates to government regulation within our plants, and also the food business. Could be through one agency. FDA plays a role today. Don't know if that's necessary tomorrow. But we work so closely with USDA and FSIS that for us it makes sense to have, you know, sort of one governance on this.
President and CEO of Tyson Foods, Tom Hayes. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes reporting.